Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in to The Scoop, the number one UNC football recruiting podcast, brought to you by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. All right, welcome into The Scoop. I'm your host, Ross Martin, joined as always by Don Callahan. Happy New Year, Don.
Happy New Year to you, Ross.
It's been a while since we have talked. You did the big live show with Tommy and Greg, and we did a preview show before that. But we are kind of putting 2023 and that class into putting 2023 class into the rear view and moving on to 2024. But this show is going to focus on transfers. How does that sound?
That sounds great, since that's what we've talked about doing.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like your job has changed a little bit with the transfer portal. UNC's yes. approach has changed. All of college football has changed with the transfer portal. So we figure we do a big show kind of updating where UNC stands, looking at this transfer class, the biggest they've had so far with 9 transfers arriving last week and this week, and kind of just give listeners and readers some insight into what's going on with UNC and the transfer portal. Sound good?
That sounds marvelous.
All right. So UNC signed 9 transfers, including the Australian punter, Tom Magison.
McGinnis, like the beer.
There's no C. McGinnis. Yeah. Thank you. I guess I'll start, like, what has it been like covering transfers? Like, how is that different? How do you do it? Provide some insight into how that works from your side.
It's super, super difficult for a lot of reasons. One, these recruitments are very, very short. Mm-hmm. Two, these are college kids that are a lot more busier than high school kids, have actual important things to do than high school kids. And in a lot of cases, they've gone through the recruiting process before, have dealt with media before, and it's no longer a novelty to them. It's no longer a big deal. And so a lot of them don't want to do interviews. And so getting information is very difficult. Things happen at a fast pace. So it's not easy to cover at all. It's not, you know, and with high school recruits, if for whatever reason I can't get a hold of a kid, then I usually can, at the very least, I can reach out to their high school coach mm-hmm. and go that route. I can't reach out to, with Amari Chapman when he was being recruited by North Carolina before he decided to transfer. I can't reach out to, what's Virginia Tech's coach?
Brent Fry.
Right. Yeah, I don't think Brent Fry would answer my phone calls to just ask me, to answer my questions about where his former player might be visiting. So yeah, it's just so different, and we're stuffing it all within, what was it, 2 weeks, I think. For the most part, I mean, obviously we have a lot more to go, but the heat of it was within 2 weeks. It was tough. It's tough to do. Hey, you gotta really rely on sources.
Move your mic a little bit away from your mouth. Yeah, you said you have to have the really reliable sources.
You have to really rely on sources.
Oh, like within the program and stuff, and to see who UNC's going after, where they stand with certain guys.
Yeah, and the thing too is, I think a lot of fans are like, oh, this guy popped in the portal. He's a former 4-star kid. UNC should be after him. And that's not always the case. I mean, if you look at what UNC signed, it's not, it's just, a 4-star guy might not be a 4-star guy anymore. Yeah. And you don't know what the background, what the situation is. And you got a guy like, and I know we'll get into all these guys individually, but Elijah Huzzy, didn't even have a profile. But yet, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being the best of this group, and he is a, an FCS kid, FCS recruit, which would be less than a 2-star in our rankings.
So how do you cover it? Do you, you try to get an interview, you know,
yes.
It's happening quick. So you may not even get that interview by the time they commit, right? I mean,
Yeah. So, I mean, I try to, my first course always is to go directly to the source, obviously, the being the recruit. And that fails a lot of times while you're covering transfers. But I think I actually had, you know, Derek Allen, you know, I talked to his dad for obvious reasons, you know, because, you know, I knew his dad because of Derek before, and then also Marcus Allen's recruitment. But Derek didn't want to do interviews. His dad said, hey, you know, you can ask me whatever questions you need, but Derek, you know, he's done this before and he's not really a big interview guy. So I really appreciate his dad kind of helping me. I mean, going through this list, a lot of these guys, I mean, the percentage of guys I end up getting interviews with, I'm pretty surprised by. But in a lot of those cases, it was kind of after the fact. After, you know, they had finally made their decisions, I was able to get up with, like, Elijah Huzzy, with I'm getting Armani's all. Amari Gaynor. Uh-huh. Got up with him afterwards. Got up with Tez Walker afterwards. Although I did talk to Tez after as UNC official, but so it's just completely a different ball game with these guys. And those who follow recruiting know. I mean, you know, by the time Tad Hudson, he committed really early, but I mean, I had probably done a handful of interviews with Tad Hudson before he committed. I mean, that's just the situation over a couple year span, yeah. You know, and with the transfers, it's 2 weeks.
You're not really building any sort of relationship with them.
No, not at all.
You're just hoping you can get an interview and then you get it up and they commit. I mean, some of this stuff happens so quickly. Like, I mean, I didn't even know, obviously you didn't tell me because you never do, but how to make graphics, you know, on the fly. But, you know, these guys were committing, you know, we had 2 in 1 night. We were in Charlotte to cover the UNC Michigan game. And I think that's when the Virginia Tech corner committed. And I think that's when one of the wide receivers committed. So it happened so quickly because they, you have to get a spot, you know, claim that spot, commit somewhere. So it's interesting. Okay, so what was UNC's approach this cycle? Because they had, I mean, they obviously probably went after a lot more guys, you know, that we don't even know about, that they put feelers out for, they tried to get interest from, and they ended up, you know, focusing on some guys. If I feel like from the outside looking in, they did pretty well in fulfilling their needs, which was kind of the goal. I actually have a piece coming out later today about, you know, what were the needs, they fulfill them, what was the goal. But so what was your take on that? What was the approach initially for UNC football in hitting the transfer portal this cycle?
Yeah, I think they zeroed in on certain positions and just really attacked those positions. And I think, though, the transfer windows, which we didn't have last year, I think helped things. So they knew they could be prepared. Okay, December 5th, you know, this is when guys can go in. Okay, these are the guys who could potentially go in. You know, so prepare for those guys. Once a guy goes in, they kind of know that they were a lot more organized. But I think it made it easier to be organized, to be prepared because of the transfer portal windows. But also, it was definitely a lot more players going in and of more variety. You know, I feel like last year it was a lot of, like, yes, you had big time players, not a lot of them, but you had big time players. But then you had a lot of, like, you know, baggage players, you know, players that were a 4-star guy, but couldn't get on the field for whatever reason, you know, whatever it was. So you didn't want to mess with them at all. But this was more organized and UNC was able to kind of attack the positions they wanted. But I think the key was they didn't really mess around too much with positions that they didn't need, you know. And I got asked a question about a linebacker, I think it was at UVA, who had a really good career at UVA. And it's like, why bring that kid in? And everyone's like, oh, well, why don't you approach it like the NFL? Just bring in the best player regardless. Well, you know, there's a lot of things to that. You got to worry about roster wise. You got to worry about playing wise. You got to worry about the implications for recruiting and all that sort of stuff. So, but North Carolina was like, we don't need linebackers because They had Gray coming back and Power Eccles. Those are two starters. They have some potential behind them. There was really no need to go after linebackers. Defensive back was a completely different situation. You had how many guys end up going in the portal from North Carolina's roster? Do you know off the top of your head?
Like six, I think. Like
six, yeah. So obviously, you needed to get some guys in there. And and the good thing for North Carolina was they could say, hey, look, we don't have a whole lot of returning starters here, so the opportunity is there to earn some playing time. We're gonna get some younger guys in there. We're gonna get some older guys in there, and let the best men play at the positions.
Did UNC, like, were there some misses, you think, on the transfer portal? Like, they went after some guys that you knew they're going after that they definitely missed on?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, especially with this, you don't get a whole lot of, you know, my top 15s, my recruitment is still open sort of graphics with these kids.
Yeah.
So what they get five official visits, but really most of them at most, a lot of them only took like one or two. At most, you saw three. I don't know. I'm sure that there are some recruits who took more than that. But I think recruits or transfer recruits did a good job of letting schools know, hey, we're not interested. We're not going to waste your time. Don't waste our time. We're looking at these couple of schools. And that helped North Carolina. Now, so if you look at, of all the guys that UNC brought on campus for official visits, and I'm pretty confident – I know almost all of them, I'll say, because I know that there's always – I'm not going to know everything. There's only one guy off the top of my head, a defensive tackle from Georgia State, who did not end up at UNC. All the rest of the guys did. I'm trying to
– did he end up at Miami?
He ended up Miami, yeah.
Yeah. Mac talked about him a little bit on Monday.
Okay.
Because Willie Lampkin had a go against him.
Okay.
We showed tape of Willie going against that Georgia State defensive tackle.
Yes. So I mean, that's a pretty good hit rate. If you even look at it last year, and I know it's hard to compare because it was a different transfer portal cycle, but the hit rate was pretty good. I think I can only think of one, that kid that was from that played at Kansas, that was from the Tidewater area, was the only one that UNC was not able to sign, and really wasn't not able to sign. They passed him just because of additional digging revealed that they really didn't want him on the roster. But yeah, I mean, so misses, it's, I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of a miss. Mm-hmm. I mean, only one guy officially visited and didn't end up at UNC, but yeah, UNC inquired about a lot of guys, and to the credit of these transfers, and a lot of that is maturity and understanding of the process and everything like that, they kind of let North Carolina know, hey, I'm already focused on these couple of schools. Thank you. But, you know, I'm going different directions sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you, how you feeling? You sound a little rough.
So really for the past 2-3 months, I have been like off and on like three days, I guess, quote unquote, sick, 3 days, not sick. Mm. And it's usually the mornings are really, really bad. And I feel fine. It's just congestion and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I had a big sore throat congestion period last week for about 8 days, which is really long for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've had this current one. I'm on, I think, day three. Mm-hmm. And then I know I feel like tomorrow is going to be fine. And then like Monday, it's going to hit me again. Yeah. I don't know.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. We're going to go through each transfer a little bit briefly. Wrap it up. Talk a little about how UNC and Mac Brown have evolved their approach to the transfer portal. That will tie nicely into my article that's going to run later today, because they're not just going after starters now. They're filling depth spots. Like, if you get 10 transfers, there's a good chance they're not all going to start. So special teams, transfers, just got to fill needs. You just need numbers. Like, they need cornerbacks and safeties to have spring practice. And then we'll talk a little about Don and I actually hung out socially on Monday. So we'll get to that at the very end for those fans of the show who like us to talk.
I had I went to Florida for a week.
Yeah, we can talk about that too. Yeah. The rare vacation after a very long and tough December of work. But first, let's talk about Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the sponsor of Inside Carolina Podcasts and, of course, the Scoop Podcast, on Franklin and online at JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the best place to get all your UNC apparel, sweatshirts, T-shirts, hats, tailgating stuff, basketball jerseys, football jerseys, baseball jerseys. Get your jerseys ready for the summer. Johnny T-Shirt is where it's at. And all Inside Carolina premium subscribers get 10% off with the code found on the message boards. So join Inside Carolina, listen to all the podcasts, Don Scoop, Shirelle Scoop, all the inside info, all the X and O breakdowns from Jason. And join Inside Carolina and get 10% off your Johnny T-Shirt order. Support them. Local, independent, alumni-owned, Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Tell them Inside Carolina sent you. And use that 10% off discount code. Couple national ads. We'll be back to talk more UNC and the new ever-changing world of the transfer portal.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, we are back. How's it going, Don?
It's going great.
I'm on day three of my juice cleanse.
Ugh, sounds terrible.
Here we go. This is my first juice. If you're watching on YouTube, it's the first juice of the day. Also, so a ginger lemon shot.
So you just drink juice and that's it?
So I have six juices a day I drink. I start off with water and lemon, and then I do a ginger shot, and then I just do every 2 hours you drink one of these juices. There's six different flavors, and some are not that great. So, but I've already lost some weight.
So, but you don't eat food.
I have not had anything to eat since Sunday.
That sounds absolutely terrible.
Yeah. And there were some cravings in there. I mean, we all brought over all that pizza on Monday. But as long as it's out of sight, out of mind, it's been pretty good so far. But yeah, 5 days is longer than you think. All right, let's get into it. First, Don, UNC's approach to the transfer portal now. We talked to Mac on Monday. We asked some questions. He talked about transfers, talked about each transfer, and it seems like they're way more open to it. It's part of doing business now. Like, you have people are going to leave you. You know, they lost all these players to the transfer portal. You have to go out and fill your roster. So they're not just going after starters. They're going after death pieces. They're going after people who have 2-3 years of eligibility to fill up spots. Is that kind of how you see it? It's a little looser. A little more acceptance from UNC?
I think the way I would phrase it is that their focus is on starters, but they're a little bit looser with that. And we talked about it, and we're going to go through this all, but just real quickly, receiver, I mean, they lost two stars at receiver. I don't think it would be a shock to anyone if the two transfer guys end up becoming starters to fill in those two spots. You know, center, obviously, well, at the time when Willie Lampkin committed, I don't know if UNC knew what Gaynor was going to do. Obviously, he's coming back. But you bring him in anyway because Brian Anderson had to leave. You get a good backup there. You know, the Jack position, Noah Taylor left. You know, Chris Collins left. You know, Kamen Rucker has been good, but you bring in Gaynor to potentially become a starter there. You know,
Kamen plays more of the strong side rushing, whereas
when Taylor went down?
When Taylor went down, he played some Jack too, but I think they'd like him better at the strong side and play Gaynor now at the Jack.
Yeah, and then, you know, DB, we talked about it earlier, you lose all those guys, a lot of them were starters, and so you can, you know, bring these guys in and say, hey, you compete for this, for the job, and whoever wins it is going to play. And then also the kicker spot, that's interesting. I like to get in the conversation with you about that on this podcast. Punter is really intriguing because clearly Ben Kernan is going to be the guy, but they're bringing in Tom McGinnis to at least learn for a year underneath Kernan, and then they would hand it over to him. So he wouldn't be a starter right now, but he's definitely the future punter, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think they're bringing in starters, or at least guys who could realistically compete for starting spots. I think you're right. The receivers could start. The cornerbacks, there'll be a competition at cornerback for sure, and at safety, because they are returning Don Chapman and Geo Biggers and Will Hardy, who end up starting at the end of the season. Other than that, you're looking at pretty much all stars. Do you remember the transfers they brought in last year? Can you remember all five?
Well, there was Legend,
mm-hmm.
Jacoby Cohen,
mm-hmm.
Gaynor.
Gaynor.
Yeah. The center.
Corey Gaynor. Yeah.
Corey Gaynor.
Sorry.
Noah Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this fifth one?
Well, I'm looking at it, but yeah.
Can you give me the position?
I'll give you another clue.
Okay.
He went, his previous school was a school that you could never even sniff in all your lifetime.
Well, that's a lot of schools. That doesn't help me any.
Offensive
lineman. Yeah. From Harvard. Yep.
What's his name? Spencer Rowland.
Spencer Rowland.
Yeah, bad radio. Okay, yeah. And so out of that group, you had everyone started except Legend, who eventually started. And mm-hmm. then I don't think...
Oh, Cohen didn't start.
Yeah, and Cohen did not start. But Taylor, Corey Gaynor, great starter. And then Spencer Rowland started the whole season too. So, and then Legend was kind of that fourth DB who, once Grimes kind of went out, and Legend will be competing for a job next year.
The other thing with Legend and Cohen were that they had a lot of years. I think, 3 years of eligibility remaining, at mm-hmm. least. And so they were almost like bringing in high school recruits just because of the amount of eligibility they had.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting quote by Mac. Let me read this. It'll be my article today. I'm really worried that coaches aren't going to be patient in developing players because they can go out and get an older one. And that's going to hurt young players on your team. Because why wait? If you can make a safe start, if you can get me a starting safety, why would I wait on a young one to grow up? It kind of gives you a glimpse of look, why wait on a freshman or a sophomore to be a starter when I can go out and get a third-year guy like Corey Gaynor, for example, to come in and start? So it kind of shows you the mental change of approach of Mac as well.
Yeah, I think it's got to be a concern, but I think I don't know. I think if you look at situation by situation, I mean, Georgia, who just won the national championship, it was built on big-time recruits. Mm-hmm. I think that will stay consistent. And then there's a lot of programs that just can't pull big-time guys out of the portal.
Yeah.
I mean, Wake Forest is not going to be able to just load up on big-time guys. That's not how they're built. They're always going to be built on development, and there's a lot of programs that fit into that category. Any group of five team, I mean, maybe you'll have a couple that will rely on some kind of guys who can't find a role in the Power Five level, but for the most part, they're going to have to develop their guys and evaluate, like they have been.
Well, two notes on that. Stanford, they can't get any recruits in, any transfers in. It's really hurt their ability to compete. Some other schools are like that as well. Kind of UNC had that issue. It seems they've been a little more lenient getting in some undergraduate because you have to have a certain number of class hours to get in, but it seems no longer as much of an issue. But you look at where UNC's outgoing transfers committed to. You have some Power Five, but also some, Kendall Carr went to Coastal, Tamir Brown went to ECU, Nash, ECU, Dilworth, ECU. But other than that, let's see what else. Yeah, I guess they had, Arkansas, Michigan State, Virginia, Texas A&M, Penn State, Kentucky. Were you surprised any of those? Any of those guys where they went?
I mean, I get no, just because you just don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, there was none of those that really shocked me. I mean, you know, Silver, you look at and you're like, I mean, I guess he still ended up Power 5 SEC school. Rara at ECU, you know, you think about it and you're like, well, he's such a tweener guy. You can understand that. You know, I just think some of these schools, some of these group of five schools who are, you know, upset about losing their top players, they're going to end up getting some really good players who weren't utilized properly or who couldn't break through in the starting lineup. You know, I think ECU is a school that could potentially benefit from this stuff.
Yeah, of course. Okay, let's get into each player individually here. I'll just say the name. I know your big scoop this week was kind of breaking them down with quotes from opposing team beat writers, or I guess the team they came from, and some stuff from Greg as well. And then kind of what's your take, and I'll give you my take, and we'll go from there. So there'll be nine transfers. We'll run through these, and we'll get out of here. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay, so quickly on each one, nothing too extensive. Nate McCollum, 5'11", 185-pound slot receiver from Georgia Tech. Your take on him in general?
Yeah, so, I mean, he was the leading receiver for Georgia Tech, which isn't saying a whole lot when you look at his numbers. 60 catches, 655 yards, and just 3 touchdowns in 11 games. But a lot of that is because of the Georgia Tech offense and the quarterback situation. But obviously, he's a guy, he's a slot guy who will compete with Kobe Pesar for that role that Josh Downs has vacated.
Yeah. Bringing competition to compete with Pesar, Pesor. And and they need numbers. I mean, you look at who they had to play in the bowl game with Green out, Downs out, and Gavin Blackwell out. They had to, you know, play guys who hadn't played as much, so they just needed more numbers. They're going to bring in 3 in the recruiting class, and then bring in 2 receivers in the portal. All right, this is the one I think fans and myself are most excited about. Devontae Walker out of Kent State, 6'3", 190-pound wide receiver out of Charlotte, was originally committed to Central, I believe, then transferred to Kent State. But really physically looks the part, and it's had some big games for Kent State. Your take?
Yeah, so I mean, he's a guy who is going to immediately compete for that vacancy created by Antoine Green's departure. You know, UNC, it's hard. Under Longo, the offense really thrived when it had a receiver that could take the top off the defense. You know, I guess we're still waiting to see what this offense, how different it's going to be underneath Chip Lindsey. But, yeah, I guess you could say every offense will benefit from a guy who can take the top off the defense, and he provided that for Kent State for sure.
You know, there's a video we did an article with that he ran one of his speeds in that Georgia game was faster than any speed reached in an NFL game this year.
Wow. Yeah.
That touchdown pass. Yeah. You think he's going to be good? Out of those two, who's going to be the better receiver?
I guess you got to go with Walker, you know, especially because I don't think it's a guarantee that McCollum beats out Pesar, you know, so.
Pesar is really good. They like him a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, he proves it.
Yeah, he's a good player.
So yeah. you got to think it's going to be Devontae's, and then Kobe Pesar, and then who's going to be the third wide receiver?
Well, J.J. Jones started, 12 games last year?
Yeah, him.
Maybe he gets passed, but.
Him or Gavin or Andre Green Jr.
Yep. Used red shirt this past year and he had a good bowl game.
They're ready for him to break out. I mean, he's a freak athlete. I know his dad's listening, but he's set for a big season. All right, moving on. Offensive lineman Willie Lampkin out of Coastal Carolina. How many eligibility years does he have?
He's 1 plus the COVID year.
Okay. I mean, it's, the thing that stands out about him, he's 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
And 275 pounds. And that's very, very short for an offensive lineman. Your takes.
Yeah. So, but he's a kid who, you know, we've talked about it before about offensive lineman playing, and he played as a true freshman, was a freshman All-American at left guard You know, two-time all-conference kid. You know, it's hard to see with Gaynor didn't come back to be a backup, especially after starting this past season.
Yeah.
So you got to think Lampkin's going to provide depth. The interesting thing too is Lampkin, I believe, has a redshirt season. So, you know, I don't know. That's something that I mean, I'm sure that he doesn't want to hear. But you know, if you don't need him, and Mac, if UNC doesn't use their reserves at offensive line as we saw this past season very much, and if they continue with that, you could potentially redshirt Lampkin and have 2 more years of him if that's what you wanted.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, he could start it at guard. They're losing Ed Montillis. So
that's a small guard for ACC school though.
It's a small center.
Yeah. The center is a little bit more forgiving.
Is it? Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, Gaynor's going to start. And then, so you have a good only backup is what they needed with Lampkin. And then, you know, he could provide some depth at guard. But yeah, interesting there. He could redshirt and still have 2 seasons of eligibility. You got to have someone who can snap the ball. All right, moving on. How are you feeling so far?
Feeling great.
Okay. Amari Gaynor out of Florida State. He played 5 seasons. At Florida State, comes for his, I guess, his COVID year at UNC. Mm-hmm. Better fit with the position. Very productive at Florida State. Your thoughts on Gaynor?
Yeah, this is the most intriguing because he really hasn't been productive for what? I guess since his redshirt freshman season. So it's been a while. He's dealt with some injuries, and that's contributed to it. He's played out of position, as you mentioned. That contributed to it. So, I mean, it's a high ceiling sort of move with a potential of not panning out too much, but it's low risk because it's just one season if he doesn't work out. There's definitely potential that he becomes that Noah Taylor in this defense. If not, then you're going to have to find that elsewhere on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, it's a position of need. They need pass rushers. They need production. He's been productive at Florida State. You got to like the experience. This guy's probably 24 years old. Maturity, kind of like what Noah Taylor brought last year. Not much risk. Bring him in. Hopefully he can produce and be that edge rusher because they need that. They need pass rush. I mean, they just don't have athletes. They might not even get, who knows Desmond Evans' status coming back. So they just need players there. So Gaynor, I wouldn't mind them getting another edge rusher. For the jack position because they just don't have numbers there. Okay. Amari Gaynor. All right. And safety, Derek Allen out of Georgia Tech. Originally committed to Notre Dame. I think quickly transferred after a spring or a year there. And then played at Georgia Tech. He has 1 season of eligibility remaining of his graduate year. This is a brother of UNC cornerback Marcus Allen, who you think is in line to start at corner next year for the Tar Heels.
Yeah, so I think Greg actually felt pretty confident that Derek would end up becoming a starter. I think that when we were having this conversation, we didn't know, it wasn't 100% certain whether Biggers was coming back, Chapman was coming back. So that's why Greg said that. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I think he's going to provide some veteran leadership for sure and push some of these guys. But, I mean, Bigger started 13 games last year, you know, and Chapman kind of, played well also, had this stuff going on earlier in the season. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, let me ask you just what's the opportunity there for –
Yeah, I mean, I think safety was one of their weaker positions. So I don't think anybody's position is safe.
Okay.
Hardy did okay. Hardy's a pretty stable spot there. He had some surgery recently. So he's probably going to miss the spring. I think it's an open competition there. Because I don't think Biggers or Chapman are some standouts. And who knows, Ja'Cory Conley may be a factor now too. So you add one more player to the roster there. Who knows? They may take another one. I assume they're not done in the transfer portal. They'll probably look to add somebody in the spring too, right?
Yeah, and there's always a chance they add someone later on this month. They're not.
How would that work? Not, Would they enroll in in June?
So, yeah. So anyone who's at it from here on out is going to be added in June.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they could add a left tackle. They need a left tackle.
Yeah. So. Well, and I think some of it too, at this point, I'm kind of speculating but educated speculating based on conversations is if there's like a no brainer, then obviously you grab them. If not, if there's any question, I think you just kind of go into the spring and see what you have first before you make any additions, because the portal is going to have a lot better names in it in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about your boy, Caden Baker?
I don't know. What about my boy, Caden Baker?
I don't know.
I mean, I was a big fan, and he played some center at one point.
Yeah, played some center last season, 2021, and then I think he's played some guard. I mean, he hasn't really started much.
Yeah.
Played at all.
I mean, the problem, and I know that you guys have talked about it a lot, is just, you know, UNC under Mac Brown hasn't gotten a lot of reserves in just to kind of get them out there. And I know there hasn't been a whole lot of opportunities because games have been close. But even when the games, other than like the the Florida A&M games like that, what was it? Was it Virginia Tech what was the game? Yeah, Virginia Tech that UNC blew them out, and they didn't really get any reserves in. It was like
I mean, he liked rolling with five, kept the same five pretty much. I think Spencer Rowland missed one game, and so Jonathan Adorno played. But yeah, I don't know if it's evaluation or what, but a lot of these guys,
a lot of positions they don't like to just throw some guys out there. Yeah, not as much as other teams, I feel like.
The offensive line will be very interesting to track in training camp. You got Diego Pounds, Adorno, Barnes is back. Caden Baker, Zach Rice. It'll be interesting to see if he plays.
What about Zach Rice?
I know they like Trayvon Green a lot. So Trayvon Green might be your left tackle next year as a redshirt freshman. So we'll see there. All right, moving on. Armani Chapman. So you have Amari and Armani.
Yeah.
And Armani. Okay. From Virginia Tech. Played a lot at Virginia Tech. Started 11 games in 2022. Played 4 years. So he has one season eligibility remaining.
Yeah. So this is, I guess, a situation where UNC has lost so much from the transfer portal. With Strong Duck leaving, Tony Grimes leaving. You do have some potential with some of the younger guys like Marcus Allen we talked about, Legend also. Day-Day Hollins decided to come back after jumping in the portal. He's just kind of be thrown in the mix to compete for playing time. The one thing, though, that I guess in my mind kind of concerns me for his chances are that, from my understanding, he kind of started kind of losing some playing time at Virginia Tech as the season went along, and it wasn't like Virginia Tech had this great defense, so that doesn't speak well for him. But I think what we're going to see in a lot of these transfer situations, not just with him, but I'm talking about more generally, is that some kids are going to shine with just getting a new scenery, new situation, new coaching staff, that sort of thing. So perhaps that kind of sparks for him, and just getting into an open competition.
Yeah. Wise man once told me there's always a reason why they're transfers. If they wouldn't be leaving if there were some stud that was going to start and play a bunch. So, unless they're group of five guys moving up, there's a reason they're moving up because they're talented and they want to play at a higher level. A player like Amari Gaynor transferring because of position, or maybe the other guy from Virginia Tech or Monty maybe transferring because of playing time. So there's always a reason with transfers. Look at basketball, Justin McCoy, Dawson Garcia. Like, there's a reason why these guys transfer. But then you have success stories like Noah Taylor, Corey Gaynor on the basketball side, Brady Manick. We're cross sports right now, Don.
Cross sports. Love it.
Making
connections.
All right. Elijah's talking recruiting, talking transfers on a Wednesday morning. Just two grown adults. talking ball. All right, Elijah Huzzy, cornerback out of East Tennessee State. Do you know what city East Tennessee State is in?
I do not. It's a good question. Do you know?
Yeah, Johnson City, Tennessee. Right across the line.
Gotcha. Okay.
Part of the Tri-City area.
So, I'm a big fan of this kid.
Hang on. Let me get some stats here real quick on him. 5'11", 190, and he has 2 years remaining. Sorry, two seasons and a COVID year remaining. Okay. And he had a bunch of interceptions over his career.
Yeah, so the recruiting process in general is not perfect. And so, I mean, it's pretty reliable. I'm not going to say the stars don't matter because they do, but it doesn't mean that guys don't fall through the cracks. And we have seen through the years, the NFL will draft a kid out of the FCS ranks and they'll become a quality starter on an NFL team. So I think one of the positive byproducts of the transfer portal is it kind of resets things to where it was supposed to be. And this could be a situation where a kid who, you know, probably should have been recruited more at a higher level when he was coming out of high school, but wasn't for whatever reason. I haven't dug deep into that background, but he has had two great seasons at the FCS level. One was, he was an All-American by the Associated Press this past season. So he's coming into a situation where North Carolina doesn't have any incumbent starters. So I think the potential is there for him to really to shine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, very productive are they Group of Five or are they FCS?
The FCS. Yeah.
Yeah.
FCS.
SoCon. So he's really stepping up level of ball here. From Georgia, I was kind of just looking up some bio stuff on him. From Franklin, Georgia, Heard County High School. It'd be interesting to see what happens at corner. You got Legend Cavazos. You got Amari Chapman, Elijah Huzzy, Marcus Allen. I mean, you got some guys there. So it was really good to get two guys in the transfer portal. You know, they could probably use it. They always have injuries there. They could probably use another as well. So we'll see what happens there. But that was a position of need. Like, they lost Grimes, Duck, Tamir Brown. It's probably another one that they lost as well. And so they had to get at least just some names in there just to have spring practice. Who else?
Yeah.
Balfour, Dante Balfour.
Yeah.
Man, I liked him out of high school.
What happened with him? He played early in the season and
played in the first game.
Yeah.
Because I think someone was out. I think Duck might have been out or somebody. And then I think just Marcus Allen passed him. So that's probably why he transferred. Because you have someone younger than you that passes you, you know?
Yeah. So I am, just doing a little bit of really terrible digging. But just the first thing I want to look at is just where Franklin, Georgia is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I guess it's definitely East Georgia, definitely south of Atlanta. Not really a whole lot out there that could contribute it to lack of exposure.
Yeah. You know the state of Georgia pretty well through recruiting, right?
Kind of. I mean, the thing is it's all Atlanta, really. I mean, you just magically take Atlanta out, the greater Atlanta area. And yeah, there's still plenty of talent, but there's not a whole lot. Like when I go and visit recruits at UNC's recruiting, I mean, I'm just driving around the Atlanta area and that's really it. The rare exception is like Ty Adams.
Yeah, but haven't they had some guys around the border there, like Hartwell and Sandy Cross? Like, where's Buford?
Buford's is the Metro Atlanta.
Okay. Yeah. Like Noonan. Just kind of, I'm looking at places that I recognize. LaGrange, and they have somebody from LaGrange.
I mean, I can't think of anyone.
I think Luke Elder was from LaGrange. Remember him?
I do remember him. Yeah. He's maybe the exception, but I mean,
yeah, it's a big state though.
It is a big state, but I mean, it's just that greater Atlanta area is just,
yeah,
where I'm always driving around.
Has that passed Miami as the hottest recruiting part in America per capita or whatever?
I don't know. I only know what North Carolina recruits, and North Carolina doesn't recruit Miami. So I don't have like a great feel for Miami.
South Florida. Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever been to Rossville?
I was at Rossville Monday night.
Right below Chattanooga, Rossville, Georgia, I guess, on the line.
There. You know, there's a Callahan, Florida.
I'm sure there's a Callahan in every state. Callahan Motors.
Cool. Is there a Callahan, North Carolina? I got to look this up.
All right, moving on.
Nick, I might move there.
Nick Cincinnati. I think I saw this guy. You know, you don't recognize, like, you don't know what these guys look like. You know, you've never covered them. But I think I saw this guy in the Keenan Football Center on Monday. He's big. I mean, he's 6'3", 220-something. I don't have his numbers right in front of me. You know, you got to love the 44 of 44 on point after tries and 19 of 23 on field goals. Obviously, this move is a show that they are not confident in Noah Burnett. They lost Jonathan Kim in the transfer portal midseason, and Noah Burnett beat out Kim. So they bring in a kicker with experience, kicked at Delaware, kicked at Cincinnati, and he has one season eligibility remaining. You said you want to talk about him.
Yeah. I wanted your take on this a lot because while Co does have experience on kickoffs, he wasn't the best. Like, that's not his biggest thing. You know, like, I think I'd have to go and look, but I'm pretty sure what I recall from my prior research was that I don't think he handled kickoffs at Delaware. He just started doing it at Cincinnati. And there were other guys like the Texas State kicker who I talked to a bunch who ended up at, like, I can't remember where he ended up going, but he was like unbelievable on kickoffs. So I felt like if it was just a kickoff thing, they probably would have went into a different direction. But Co is an amazing place kicker. And with Noah Burnett, that really surprised me that they you know, took this kid. What's the feeling here? Obviously he's coming in to compete at the very least, but I mean, why?
Why is he coming to Carolina?
I mean, not why is he coming to Carolina? Why did Carolina want to bring a kicker?
They're not confident in Noah Burnett. Noah Burnett, you know, missed a field goal in the NC State game. I think he missed a big one in the bowl game. Mm-hmm. So he missed a couple kicks there late, and obviously they didn't have confidence in him kicking one over 50 either, because they could have kicked a 50 something one to win the bowl game.
That's right. Yep.
And like, Max about competition with kickers too. Like, it didn't matter that Kim was on scholarship. They picked a walk on Noah Burnett over him. So best kicker wins, bring in another guy. So yeah.
Okay.
All right, a little kicker talk there. Hunter. I always love the weird foreign guys. Or, you know, I was actually buddies with Tom Sheldon. I tweeted at him. Did you see what Tom Sheldon tweeted?
I saw it, but I didn't understand it.
I didn't either. Some Australian stuff. But they bring in Tom McGinnis. He's supposed to get on campus today, Wednesday, per sources. Another guy from Pro Kick Australia. Like Don said in the intro, he's going to kind of learn the sport of football under for 1 year under the current punter, whose name escapes me.
Ben Kernan.
Ben Kernan, the Irish guy who's been pretty good at Carolina. Your thoughts on this, how this went down, any insight?
Yeah, I think this is kind of a cool idea. The other thing, so he has a redshirt season available. So, I mean, unless Kernan gets injured, he's going to redshirt this season and have 3 years of eligibility after Kernan graduates. I mean, the whole Pro Kick Australia stuff has worked out for a lot of programs. There are these guys are in the NFL also. So this is a great idea for North Carolina. And really, you know, you try them out, you see how it works, and kind of go from there. It's so interesting because, like, you know, McGinnis, I think he's played rugby since the age of five.
Isn't it Aussie rules football? Isn't Aussie rules football too?
Aussie rules football.
Am I wrong?
I don't know the difference or what the heck. I know that there are differences. I was listening to some podcasts and someone was talking about it. there's like differences in anyway. He's been playing a somewhat football like sport, but not full, not our football like sport. But not much like our football, since he was five. And who knows how old he is now, because there's not a whole lot.
He's 21.
Okay. So he's not that, old. Not as old as Tom. How old was Tom?
Tom was like 28.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's not that old. but I think this is a great idea. You know, the outside the box idea. It's so weird because the kid's never been to Chapel Hill. And God, can you imagine if someone grabbed you and told you, hey, we're going to throw you in Sydney, Australia for the next 3 years, and you're going to do something completely different. You know, I don't know.
This guy is big too. He's only 6 foot tall, which is, you know, okay, but he's 220. So he is thick. Max showed some video of him. We saw a video of all these guys, and he is thick. I mean, I'm 6'5", 223 as of this morning. And I don't want to consider myself really skinny right now. So he is a thick 6 foot 220. So they're adding some beef to that special teams room, because Ryan Coe is 6'3", 227.
Well, you know Don Callahan. You know what Don Callahan is?
Like 5'10", 230.
I'm about 6 foot. Yeah, I'm about 225 now.
I'm lighter than you because of my juice cleanse.
Because you're juice. Well, I am not doing a juice cleanse, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. That's good. Any good insight there? Get to know the class. Kind of a rundown there. Don's takes, my takes, how they fit into the lineup and roster depth chart. It's a new element, a new part of college football. Everybody has to get used to. You're going to look, UNC got 19 new players this week. And I did the math. That's 22% of your scholarship players. So you essentially have a fourth of a new team. And they'll probably be buddies with each other, and they kind of immerse themselves in there, but they're not coming in alone. And it's kind of crazy. 25% of your roster has been flipped with the incoming freshmen, 10 new freshmen, 9 transfers.
Yep, that's nuts.
Hey, do you think Ryan Coe is related to Nick Coe?
I don't know.
Remember Nick Coe?
Yes, I do know. Remember Nick. I don't think they're related.
Yeah, me either. Okay. Before we get out of here, Don, you came back to you came your second visit to what are we gonna call my house?
Casa Ross.
Yeah.
Well, your thoughts, Rossville?
Your thoughts on the whole, you know, I had you over to watch the Chester Championship game. Coworkers and friends, your thoughts on the experience. You said you want to talk about this.
Well, we gotta talk a little bit about some other stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. It was good seeing producer John.
Yeah.
You know, he came through with the pizza, which was nice of him. And the game sucked, you know. But I think anyone who would have played Georgia in the national championship, that would happen. Everyone's going to, you know, or they have been kind of trashing on TCU. But, you know, and everyone's like, oh, this is why we shouldn't expand. But in reality, those two semifinal games were awesome. That Ohio State Georgia game was awesome. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Georgia came to play this season. And so, but anyway, so besides that, Ross's house is Ross's house. I did not hit any goats. I had a hard time finding his house because it's dark and there's no streetlights. And then there's no like address sign, I don't think. Or maybe I found one at the very end.
It's on the mailbox.
Yeah, that's what I found at the very end.
And you met some fans, or at least one fan.
Yeah.
What's his name?
His name is Wayne. but he wouldn't tell me his screen name on Inside Carolina, which makes me very suspicious.
Wayne's a long time good buddy of mine from Chapel Hill, long time listener of the Scoop and all of you in Inside Carolina's content. Finally got to meet his boyhood hero, Don Callahan. Yeah, it's a good time. We had producer John in the house. We had Don. We had Keaton Brewer, shout out, son of Gunner Brewer. We actually FaceTimed with Gunner Brewer. How about that?
Yeah, I hadn't seen. I've actually bumped into Gunner a bunch of times on the road, so it's always good to see Gunner.
I mean, we had a who's who. You had Don Callahan FaceTiming with Gunner Brewer. That's a lethal combination there. And Pat James, who's contributed to Inside Carolina in long form, Passy, Pat Stats, ran a UNC kind of baseball website for a while, and David Ray. That was the lineup right there.
Yeah, it was a good time. I just wish the game would be better. So I got to tell you about my Florida trip. Yeah.
You went to Florida. Don really takes vacations. He deserved it after, you know, Don was on the recruiting stuff, on the transfer stuff. And then after Christmas, you went to Florida.
Yeah. So spent about half the week with my father-in-law who lives in New Smyrna Beach, which was a lot of fun. Went to St. Augustine for a day, did all that sort of stuff. The other half spent it at Jacksonville Beach. Went to the Gator Bowl, which was actually an awesome game.
Just you and your family, or?
Yeah, so I'm sure I've laid this out before, but, you know, Irish Catholic family. So, you know, a lot of my family members are big Notre Dame fans. And then also I have a cousin who lives in South Carolina, so he's a big Gamecock fan. And so, yeah, so my brother was already going to be down in Florida because he's considering moving down there, but he did a little vacation, him and my sister-in-law. And it just kind of worked out perfectly. It was the same time he was going to be down there. Some of the other family members came up or came down or whatever. And we had an absolute blast at the Gator Bowl. There was probably, like, you know, I know UNC fans want to hear this, but Gamecock fans showed out, and they impressed me.
South Carolina versus Notre Dame.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And it was probably, like, I would say 60, 70% South Carolina, the rest Notre Dame. I sat on the Notre Dame side, but there was a lot of South Carolina fans there. And, of course, I sat in the nosebleeds, but the seats were awesome still. And so it was great during the different – because that was I don't know if you probably don't remember this game out of all the bowl games, but it was back and forth. One team would score, the other team would score, sort of thing. So just watching the fan bases. Yeah, and then we had a little bit of – there were some interactions with some fans. Some fans got booted from our section. Whoa. There was this one guy who – I'm trying to think of the actor's name. You know, Everybody Loves Earl, or Hi, My Name is Earl.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
The show, the brother on there, the heavier guy. Yeah. So there was a Notre Dame fan who looked like him, and he had a fantastic dance every time Notre Dame scored. I actually have video of that. I'll have to send that to you. So, awesome time spending time in the beach, on the
Did
beach.
Did you go on the beach?
Yeah. We hung out on the beach, walked the beach a bunch, sort of thing. But
both your kids were there?
No kids. So it was even better. Yes. So my daughter was going to, it was my daughter's mother's Christmas. So we celebrated on Christmas Eve, our Christmas. So my daughter was already going to be in Georgia visiting her mom for that week. And then Katie's mom took Caleb also. So we made it just strictly, Katie's my wife.
Where's Katie's mom live?
She ironically, or coincidentally, I guess is a better word, lives like the next town over from Brianna's mom.
Okay.
So
grandmother and mother.
Grandmother and mother who don't know each other or anything in two small towns in the middle of Georgia. So it ended up working out perfectly for us.
You and the wife crisscrossing Florida.
That's right. You know, did a bunch of beaches. It was great.
There you go. All right. Good stuff. Good scoop there. Got some scoop on transfers and scoop on Don's travel.
That's right. The best travel was going to Rossville on Monday night.
That's right. All right, guys. Appreciate y'all listening. This is The Scoop presented by Johnny T-Shirt, GiantT-Shirt.com. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. I think we're going to try to keep this going every 2 weeks as we get into – actually, quickly, sorry. The recruiting calendar. What's going on with the recruiting calendar quickly?
So we're in a dead period right now.
Okay.
Friday opens up visits again until essentially February is an entire dead period. So we have a couple of weeks. So there's potential for a couple of visits. Obviously, North Carolina plays NC State and basketball on the 21st. I imagine that will be a big day for visits.
Okay.
But I mean, I think throughout you're going to see recruits on campus throughout the rest of January once the dead period ends.
And okay, so you have some junior days, 24 recruits, 25 recruits.
Yeah, I think the focus won't be so much on junior day stuff. It'll be more like getting guys on campus. I mean, what's a junior day anyway? I mean,
yeah.
It's basically a junior day. But yeah, I mean, I think it won't be these massive, like, you know, 50 guys. It would probably be more like a dozen guys on campus at once, sort of thing.
I think more intimate is how you worded it.
Intimate, yes. That's what we're also all about.
All right, good stuff. We're going to do a 2024 preview podcast soon as well. Kind of lay out, you know, yeah, we got get to know the whole different class. So we'll lay out the 2024 class on an upcoming pod. Appreciate y'all listening, and we will check you out next time. Appreciate it.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.